Hello, everybody, and welcome to NWR's Connectivity episode 251. I am your brand new host, John Reardon, and I am joined, hopefully as always and forever, by Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody. It's been a very long time. I think we started this podcast sometime when the 3DS was just a rumor, and it has gone over many, many different lives. It was Nintendo Report Newscast for humorously 69 episodes. And then nice. And then it turned into Connectivity, and then I stopped being on it regularly, and then some wonderful people like Nick Bray, Adam Abu Nasser, Don Koopman, Xander Morningstar, there was a lot of other people that kind of filled in the gaps, and then Connectivity's kind of faded away. I think the last episode before this was in 2019, and before I think there was like a year break, so yep. I think we're gonna try to bring this back weekly and see how that goes.
We are. The plan is for me or Neil, maybe one of us occasionally, but hopefully both of us most of the time, to come in, talk about random stuff, whatever. Maybe it's what we've been playing. It might be on a Nintendo system. We might just be playing Xbox. Maybe we just want to talk about Star Wars. We're going to keep it pretty loose, and we'll also have this thing be open to other members of the staff to come in and talk to us about whatever they're into. So this will be your ticket into the minds behind Nintendo World Report.
Yeah, and you can hit us up. I'll double check after we finish recording this. I believe connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com is still an email that you can send things to. So feel free
blow
to send
the
in
dust.
Send in some listener mail there, or even like if you're like, hey, now that you guys are doing this podcast again, I'd like to see you do. I know one of my last things that I did for Connectivity that I think was sometime in the early 200s was the Weyonder years, where went year by year on the Wii. I did a video on the 3DS, the first year of the 3DS, and maybe by the time you listen to this, the second year of the 3DS video will be done. But we could always we could talk about that at length. We could talk about a specific game. Like, we're kind of really flexible with this. This is more, I guess, a creative output, if you will, of us to try things in the podcast space, because that was kind of, I think, the spirit of the show when it started.
Yes, indeed. So we are getting back to the roots and really just giving us an excuse to talk about wherever the heck we feel like talking about in a less structured format.
Yeah. And there's also, since there's no events anymore, which is where some of the game show stuff that we used to do here, maybe there will be a game show here. Maybe I'll do Super Nintendo Sweep. But probably not, because that involves video. But I mean, if you want to see me do that, just send an email, connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
It's going to be really funny when that's the wrong email address and you spend the entire podcast plugging it.
I might have to check while you're in the middle of talking about some Star Wars stuff. I don't know.
Well, we are going to start things off in a very classical way, talking about new releases, what we've been playing, what we're reviewing, things like that. I guess we can start with the game. We won't talk too much about it because we've already done reviews. You and I have done a preview discussion on it. So we've said a lot of the things we want to say about it. But that is Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. Neil, you reviewed this. You liked it. Do you still like it?
Yeah. So I guess a peek behind the curtain. we use a staff account for playing some review games. We did this for this because then it let John do his lore stuff.
Somewhere a Nintendo Ninja is like, wait, a what? You've done what? We have to patch that.
But it allowed so John, you know, captured video, did some lore stuff, and then I played the game for review. But because of that, I have a save file that is not attached to my main account. So I played through this game in its entirety, did not totally 100% it on that staff account, and then went through and I've been playing through it on my own account. So at this point, I'm probably 50 plus hours deep overall in this game. I put about 20 plus hours in the review period. And then I've done about 20 plus hours with you know, my personal account. And I like it a lot. I do have to say, now that I'm near the end of playing through the story on my second playthrough now it's getting a little tiring. After playing through the game almost entirely twice,
And I think that's fair.
Yeah. Like, I don't really see that as a bad thing. I think the game's fantastic. It's just unfortunate that it kind of runs like garbage on the Switch. There's certain characters, like Impa is the one that is not spoilery. That is like, just, you know, when you have a couple Impa clones on the screen and you lay down certain attacks, it's just going to slow down to a crawl. And the only thing that I can really say positively about this, which I said in the review, was that I can, like, plot out when the slowdown's going to happen. Where it's like, all right, I'm doing this combo. I'm like, okay, this is going to happen now. Like, I just need to be able to be, like, you know, accounting for that. And then going back to smashing things after it goes back to normal frame rate.
And I will say, and I think this is probably true for a lot of, if Switch is your primary system, you've probably developed a little bit of a tolerance for the frame rate drops. So it didn't get to me too bad until like toward the very end, like when shit gets real crazy, then it starts to be like, okay, we're crawling. And then, and it didn't help. Like at the end of that game, you have, I won't say anything spoilery, but you're in a lot of environments where the camera's kind of struggling to point at what you want it to point at, and your frame rate is diving. And like, yeah, toward the end of that game, I was like, all right, this is getting a little rough even for me. But
like, if this was
but it's just so good.
If it was technically smooth, like a floor of a 9, like that's how I feel about this game. Like, it is.
Yeah,
it is far and away better than Hyrule Warriors. I think it's a much smarter game. It's a much more streamlined game. Like, I loved Hyrule Warriors and all. I even played it a lot on 3DS, but there was like too much game there. It was overwhelming. And this feels like there's still too much game there and it's overwhelming, but it's just presented in a better manner because you're just dealing with that one map of Hyrule.
It's just the story. I don't have to go back out into it. Like, you can finish all of the original Hyrule Warriors and then you leave the story mode and then it's like, oh, but have you done adventure mode?
Yeah, but have you done these 15 maps?
Where you have to go through, here's the entire plot of Majora's Mask as represented by these characters. And yeah, like, has just, that is too much game.
I hope they do DLC where they bring in some like notable characters outside of Breath of the Wild into this art style.
Just kind
of,
yeah. Yeah. When it's the game does deal with some, you know, parallel universe type stuff. Everything in it is theoretically canonical. It might be a different timeline, but
it's not canonical. Yeah, like it is an offshoot of Breath of the Wild. It is not necessarily an offshoot of the overall Zelda series.
But it's a very much an in-universe game.
Yeah.
As opposed to the original Hyrule Warriors, which was more a self-aware fan service homage fest.
Yeah. And we're sitting here, we're like 2 weeks away from when it came out. I'm still kind of surprised we haven't heard any mention of like a season pass DLC, which makes me think
very strange for Koei Tecmo.
Yeah, like it makes me think that maybe we will just get like there's a couple of characters that I think people data mined, and I won't go into specifically who they are because I guess that's technically a spoiler territory. But there are a couple characters in the game that people have data mined and found like, oh, there's voice samples that implies that they're going to be added as character playable characters later. And that's probably true, because definitely looking at the final list, I'm like, oh, like surprised that person wasn't there. And I could see those added, but maybe they're just going to get added as like free DLC, kind of like how in the original Hyrule Warriors, they added, I think it was what, like the, there was like the Poe character.
In the very first one, wasn't
Sia?
Was Ganondorf DLC?
No, I think Ganondorf was the last unlock in Hyrule Warriors.
Because I remember, like, didn't they add on a little Ganondorf sub-story after the main game? And wasn't that a free update? I don't remember. That game's been updated and DLC'd so many times and on so many systems that it gets vague. But yeah, there was definitely some free stuff in the original one.
So let's see. I'm looking at the Wii U. Oh my God, there was so much DLC.
There's so much.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay. So what it was is that you could play as Ganondorf, but you could play as Ganon. And that was one of the season pass parts. What it was is that there was a free game update pretty early on that it was Sia, Volga, and Wizro. Those were like recurring. I mean, Sia was like the final boss of Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
And then there were two like recurring sub bosses, and then you could play as them. And then they added like, oh man, there's so much deal.
Don't they have like a parallel mission line? Like they have a little parallel storyline that you can play through. It was all like existing levels. But
yeah. Yeah. Cause then there was also storyline. Yeah. So as part of the season pass, there was a master quest pack where you could ride a Epona when you play as Link.
And then there was terrible
five. Yeah, that wasn't great. There was Twilight Princess, where it was Midna in her true form, and a new weapon. And then there was Tingle and Young Link for Majora's Mask. And then the final thing was the Ganon mode. And then like they added all the characters that showed up on the 3DS one later on, which then that's when you had Marin, Toon Zelda, Linkle, Skull Kid. God, like that. King Daphne's love that he turns into the boat. Yeah.
Did they show up in the Wii U one?
Yeah. So they were DLC for the
Okay.
And it looks like it was DLC that you all had to pay for. Because there was so that the structure of Hyrule Warriors, the first one, was there was the game came out on Wii U. There was a season pass on Wii U, which is the one that I just laid out. Then Hyrule Warriors Legends came out, and then there was a season pass for that.
Yes.
Which that's when it added, there was a Link's Awakening pack, a Phantom Hourglass Spirit Tracks pack, and then a Link Between Worlds pack. And then there was all the characters that were new to the 3DS version, which was Linkle and a bunch of Wind Waker ones, then could be playable on the Wii U version. And then the definitive edition was all of that, which is why you get that unholy jumble of like, well, now you have 75 characters and there's 15 different new modes to play.
Yes. Yeah, The Switch version is just too much game.
Yeah.
It's too definitive.
Yeah. Like, I remember playing the Switch version because at that point, that was the third time I played Hyrule Warriors. As we learned, I can play through it twice, and I only get tired by the end. Three times, that's too many. So please, Age of Calamity, stay on Switch. If you move to another platform, let me take my save data with me.
I believe I did play through the story of Hyrule Warriors all three times.
I did not on Definitive Edition. I did on Wii U and 3DS. Maybe I will get to this. Although I feel like going back to play Definitive Edition after playing Age of Calamity is not going to be an easy transition.
It does run much better.
Yeah, that is true.
That I will say that for it. Definitive Edition is a very smooth game. Especially compared to Age of Calamity or compared to the original Wii U version.
But I'm at a point with Age of Calamity where I'm thinking of where it's slotting into my game of the year, like my rankings.
Yeah.
Because it's high up there.
It's up. Yeah. If we're as far as limiting to Nintendo system games.
Like, I think as far as like what Nintendo put out this year, it's probably between that and Origami King for me.
Yeah, I did not play Origami King. Surprise. Hyrule Warriors is probably.
Yeah.
That's great. Which I really liked, I fell off of.
Animal
right
Crossing
away.
Is a really solid third for me on my Nintendo Game of the Year list. I have so many problems with Animal Crossing New Horizons, but I put 200 hours into it. So
yeah.
Like, there's a point where I'm like, you know what? That thing got me through a rough time. In early quarantine COVID time, so me and Animal Crossing will be forever friends.
Yeah. But. Yeah. No, I mean, realistically, I think my game of the year is Rebel Galaxy Outlaw, and not a major release at all, but a $20 eShop game.
Yeah, I have that. That is on my wish list on Switch. I think if that goes on sale on Switch, I will buy it. I think it was just because I know I frantically messaged you when you got the review code for that, and I was like, does it run okay? To which you said it was fine. And then I was like, all right, I'll eventually get that. But I just knew, like, because I think it came out and it was $30. I think if it was $20, I probably would have just bought it. But I probably still wouldn't have played 30. It yet. So
I remember looking at the price and being very shocked that it was that cheap.
Yeah.
I felt like they could have charged more.
Yeah, maybe
for
it was like $25. But if that goes on sale or if I get to a point where there's a lull in what I'm playing, which is probably impossible. I just need to convince myself to spend $60 on a series that I've never played before. So that way I have a new game on my Xbox. which that's Yakuza Like a Dragon. I think I'm saying Yakuza right. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't judge you if you said it wrong.
I mean, like I've
you did pick that one up though.
Yeah,
right?
So I did.
Is your first Yakuza game.
Yes. I did.
Interesting choice.
I have Zero has been installed on. It was installed on my Xbox One and it's installed on my Series X. But I just it's the fact that it's an RPG is really what got me in. And I talked to enough people. I know if NWR staffer Matt Zawadniak is listening, he's probably like, I told you not to get it. But I heard from enough people that had not played earlier games in the series that like jumped into that and just loved it. So I like it. I like it a lot and I like the world a lot. I've heard some complaints about the battle system kind of getting like unwieldy and not great throughout the game, which I totally see. I think I'm in like chapter 4 or 5 right now. I've been kind of slow boating it. I've been playing it as there's like that way that people in Japan supposedly play Dragon Quest, where they like play a little bit before bed and just take a very long time to play it. That's basically how I'm playing this game. I just like put in like, oh, I'm going to play like a half an hour to 45 minutes here. And then I'll come back to it a couple days later and be like, I'm going to play like another 40 minutes. But it's really fun. Like, and I love exploring the world of Japan that they've created. There's a lot of goofy stuff to do. I did play Outrun in that game, which is wonderful. And it is that it does feel like the evolution of Shenmue in a way, which is something that I had always kind of heard about the series. And I'm not the world's biggest Shenmue fan. But like I kind of like respect what it did. So playing Like a Dragon is weird for jumping into a series in the 7th game. But it does get me. I think when I get through this game, I will likely go back and play the earlier Yakuza games because I just like I understand why people like the style of this series, because it is like telling a serious story while being super batshit insane.
Yeah, I've been surprised by how, and this is coming from a perspective of outside that fan base, but it seems like the fan base has been very willing to accept a total genre shift for this game.
Yeah,
because obviously the previous Yakuza games were not JRPGs. They were run around a town and punch dudes.
Yeah, and it's funny because it seems like a lot of this game is very similar to the other games, except for instead of running around the town and punching dudes, you go into turn-based battles where what you do is select to go run around and punch a dude.
Right. Yeah. So the soul is still there.
Yeah. And I know, like, I have seen some kind of, I guess, like, diehards of the series. I'll call out Matt Zawadniak again. I've heard some people, like, kind of be a little disheartened the fact that this is the direction that the series is taking. But it has been largely positive. Like, I remember when this was first announced, like, I didn't think it would be as warmly received overall. And it really has been.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I can't think of another example where a series has just been like, we're going to be a totally different genre now. And everyone was like, cool, great, let's do it.
It does make me think that there is not a lot of overlap between Yakuza fans and Paper Mario fans.
That's probably fair.
But what else have I been playing? I actually, by the time you hear this, my review for Picross S5 will be live on NintendoWorldReport.com. Here's a really easy way to sum it up. Did you play any other Picross games? Would you like to play more? it's the Picross guys at Jupiter made another Picross game. Guess what? Still great.
That is the case for most Picross.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, there is bad Picross. I think there was Nonogram's Prophecy. I think it was very cheap on the Switch earlier this year. Like that is.
Yeah.
My wife got that. And I think she got to some puzzles that were just unsolvable.
Good.
She had me look at it being like, okay, like look at this board. Like, no, you have to just make a guess. This isn't accurate. But for the large part, like, yeah, like there's a formula to follow with Picross. If you execute on that formula, it's going to be a good game. And there's a polish to the way that Jupiter makes these Picross games. I think they have very good tutorials if you are new to the style of puzzles. The one thing is that they still don't have touchscreen support, which I don't know why they don't have. Like,
did they? I mean, they've had it on DS and 3DS,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it's, for some reason on Switch, they don't have touchscreen support, and they haven't. That's, like, it's something that doesn't bother me personally, because that's, like, I'll use buttons for it. But I've gotten to the point where when I review these games, I call it out every time, because I know that there is a sect of the Picross playing community that is super, like, why the hell isn't there touchscreen support here?
For a game like that, it does. I mean, and to be fair, I get upset anytime I'm in a pause menu and I can't interact with the buttons on the touchscreen. So yeah. If there's a large shiny button on the screen, I should be able to poke it with my finger and have it work.
Agreed.
But, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Picross S5 is wonderful. My last game that I'm playing, which is, I don't know, probably my RPG of the year, which would be Madden 21. There's a good chance that as we continue this podcast, you can just check in on whatever team I'm playing as in Madden, which I guess I'll just give the full primer on what I do when I play Madden at this point. I will usually play a franchise as the Green Bay Packers and like play through the current season as is. And I'll have a lot of fun with that. But what I enjoy doing more, I used to do it where I would do a full on fantasy draft. So you basically puts like every player in the NFL into a pool. You pick a team and then you go through a draft of picking your team. And then I would like sim the first year, trade all of my like older players away and just get as many first round picks as I could, and then start to make a team and then basically take that team to the Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl or two, and then stop playing it. What I've started to do now is I will take an existing team and then trade away all of their older players or like players that I don't like as much, and then do the same thing where I get a bunch of draft picks and then I move them to a different city. So right now I'm playing as the Dublin Celtic Tigers. I took the Washington football team, traded. I think I still have some of their younger good players on my team, but I drafted like a rookie quarterback. And in the second year, I won the Super Bowl. It was actually like kind of thrilling because all of the games went down to the wire. I wound up there was at one point where my team was like 3-5 during the regular season, but then I wound up like winning out the rest of the year. One of my playoff games, I scored on the literal last play, and I really thought I was like, ah, damn it, like I'm gonna lose this. Like, it was, you know, I thought I was gonna like finally complete the run, but I'm seeing if I can defend the title. But that's where I'm at in my Madden playthrough. Next week, I might have gotten bored with the Dublin Celtic Tigers and moved on to moving them to another city.
You know, you're maybe too deep into a game once you're coming up with challenges to make it more difficult for yourself, just so you have a reason to keep playing it.
But it's fun. It's better. I think I had the London Black Knights at one point. There was it was a San Diego Aftershocks was another team that I think I moved the Jaguars there.
Is there a lot of American football in Europe?
No, but they have been. They've been doing well, except for this year. They usually do games in London, and there has been talk about like they might like that. Like, there's been kind of rumors of maybe moving a team to London. They did a game in Mexico City. I think they've done it like twice. So there's been rumors of moving a team to Mexico. It would be really complicated because I think what it would be is that like if a team were to move to London, they would probably also have like a city in America that they would kind of like when they're not playing in London, they would like be there.
Right.
So like the team that has been talked about for moving to London has been the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I think like part of that is like they might actually like stick around in Jacksonville, but like their home city will be London. But because when they play like a team in America, they're not going to like want to spend the week in London and then fly out to go play in in San Diego or whatever. There's no team in San Diego anymore. It's San Francisco, which they can't play in right now because there's a 3-week ban on contact sports in the county where the San Francisco 49ers play. So for the next 3 weeks, the San Francisco 49ers are playing in Arizona. Also, the Toronto Raptors in the NBA are playing in Tampa, I think.
I want all sports to go no contact for the duration of COVID.
It would be funny if like, no, they're gonna play in San Francisco. It's just like it's not even, everybody's in a bubble. It's not even two-hand touch because that would still be contact.
Yeah,
it's just they can't touch each other.
They have to work it out with words. Well, that's great. I'll talk a little bit about the game I've been reviewing. I couldn't think of a way to segue from football to a Souls-like.
So I'm super curious about this because we got an email about this game, and then I saw it was from some ex-Vigil, the people who made Darksiders, and the other half of the people who left Darksiders, Airship Syndicate, they made Battle Chasers Night War, which is amazing, and that Darksiders Genesis game, which I've yet to play, but would like to.
It's very good.
Yeah, so talk about game from Gunfire Games that you were playing.
Yeah, so Gunfire, like Neil said, the other half of Vigil, and they were the team that did Darksiders 3. This is Chronos Before the Ashes, which is, it was originally an Oculus VR exclusive.
That's wild.
Back in 2016, I was curious. So it's a Souls-like, and I looked up footage of the original version, and in the original, because I was trying to figure out like how a third-person Souls-like would work in VR. In the original, you have a fixed camera in sort of like an old-school Resident Evil style. Like, you'll go into a room, and your perspective will be in the corner, and you can look around from there as you guide your little guy across the room, which it got a bunch of awards. It was highly praised. To me, just watching it, that seems like the worst way in the world to ever play a Souls-like. But okay. Before the Ashes version, which is kind of like a reworking of that original game, same layouts and everything, but now it's a traditional third-person Dark Souls-style game. What I will say about it is that it's... I don't want to say it's like baby's first Dark Souls, but... The combat is a little less brutal. It's structured the same way, where it's all about perfectly timed dodges, finding your opening to attack, parrying. And of course, if you die, you go back to the last, you know, however many miles away the last checkpoint was. But the combat, you can take quite a few hits before you die for most enemies. And they've also really simplified the loot system. In Dark Souls, there's constantly like little glowing things everywhere, and you pick them up and it's, oh, this is the Ring of Elgabar. And if you wear this, you'll have +7 bleed resistance to dark gnomes. And like everything is incredibly complicated. Every item has like pages of lore and backstory. In Chronos, the only thing enemies ever drop is shards that you use to upgrade your weapons. And you will very rarely across the game occasionally find a new weapon. And that is like it. And then the other stuff you're finding is things to complete puzzles. So keys and stuff you would expect in like a Zelda game, like just random items that you're going to use to finish off puzzles. And so with that, I actually have been finding that I've been enjoying it much more than I usually enjoy a Souls game, because there's not just this depth of like, oh, I'm probably playing this the wrong way, and this guy probably has a weakness to some arcane magic thing that I don't even know. And I've probably built my character wrong for this thing. Like, it's much more straightforward and direct, and I feel like I can get a handle on it. And I'm having a really good time. I will say that it runs okay on Switch. It does have some like weird, just like the example I'll give is, I was the first boss you fight. When you're fighting him, there are these little like raised sections of a design on the floor, and your character's walk cycle can get stuck on them. So you'll occasionally like get yourself stuck in this canal between two things that definitely aren't supposed to be blocking your movement. They're just part of the floor. So weird stuff like that, weird collision detection that causes some problems occasionally, and just little inconveniences like that. But overall, really enjoying it. And it's interesting because this came out, the original version of it came out 2 years before Darksiders 3, which also took on a more Souls-like progression system. So it's kind of interesting to see these guys experiment with that gameplay system. And you can kind of see the roots of what would ultimately become Darksiders 3 in this, which is neat.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Darksiders 3 to hit Switch. I feel like it's surprised it hasn't yet.
I would love it, but having played it on PS4 and Xbox One, I also know how poorly it runs on those systems. And so getting that thing to run well on a Switch, I wouldn't be super optimistic. It's a great game. But I'm not super optimistic. I'll play the heck out of it if they ever do. But yeah.
But this game seems really neat. Then, I don't know if it's quite up my alley, but it's definitely like I'm happy that you're enjoying it. I just even my I feel like maybe we have, are of the same mind a little bit with some of the Dark Souls style, but it's not a type of game that I like playing as much anymore.
It's a type of game that I want to like. I can see it. And really, like with most of the Dark Souls games or any of the Souls games, the actual like From Software Souls games, I usually make it about 3/5 of the way through the game and then hit the point where I'm just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
That's exactly what happened to me with the original.
Yeah.
I guess Dark Souls 1, not Demon's Souls.
Yes. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. Like Dark Souls 3. I had a great time with that game right up until the point where I decided, you know, I'm done.
Yeah,
I've had a good time and I'm now at the cusp of having a bad time. And I don't want to have a bad time with this game. So I think I'm done.
That's why, like, I have a little bit of a working theory that I haven't revisited in a while, probably because I've been so nose down on reviews for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
But I remember it with Shin Megami Tensei 4 on the 3DS. That was a game that I loved. I loved playing it. And I probably had maybe like 15 hours left in the game. But I was just getting to a point where I'm like, this isn't as fun anymore. Like, I've had a great 30 hours with this game. Maybe I'm just going to stop playing it here and that's fine. And it's a mindset that that when I'm playing games, not for review, because playing games for review, usually I'm like, oh no, I should keep playing it and finish it. But like where I'll get like, it might even happen with Yakuza Like a Dragon, where maybe I will get like 30 hours into that game and just be like, no, I'm good. Like, I've heard the battle system only downhill from here. Maybe I'll just hang it up, go watch the ending on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a healthy mindset.
Yeah.
Don't kill yourself getting every last Korok seed in Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. Just play games for fun.
I feel like, I mean, maybe we'll have to invite Justin Berube on at some point, but I think he's something at like 50 hours into Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. I think he has every Korok seed, but he's only on like chapter 3.
Yeah, well, and the worst part is I'm not sure if he's hit the point. There comes a point in that game where you unlock a tracker for them.
Yeah.
I think you get what you still need.
It's something that I actually realized it because it didn't pop up for me my second time through. It's because there's a chain of unlocks that you have to like unlock a few things before it that I think show up in like chapter 3 that you have to have to like complete a couple side quests first, and then the option will come up that you can then get the Korok tracker.
Right. And the best part with Justin, for any of you that don't know Justin, is that the man does not like Breath of the Wild.
Yep.
But had to 100% Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I think he got every Korok seed. I hope to Jesus he didn't get every Korok seed.
I think he did.
Oh my God, man.
We should ask him.
Yeah.
But you get
golden poop if you get all of them. It's a joke. Like,
right. And so the second thing is that I think Musos are probably Justin's least favorite game genre.
Yeah.
So to have a Muso based on a Zelda game he didn't like and had to put way too much time into, and now he's having to do the same thing in a Muso. I don't know if it's karma or if God just hates him, but it's something.
So kind of, I guess, in line with this, it's something that came up in the Nintendo World Report staff Slack about Fire Emblem Three Houses. Which I apologize for the tangent, but this is something that I need to get off my chest because it's frustrating. So Nintendo seems to have this thought of, and I think it's a little bit like, and this is me completely speculating. So if Japanese developer Nintendo listening to this, I'm sorry if I'm putting words into your mouth. If you were more open if you were more open about your development strategies, then we wouldn't have to guess, and you probably wouldn't have as many hackers coming at your door. But I look at something like Fire Emblem Three Houses, and the way that game is structured is that to get all of the story, you have to play through the first half of the game 4 times. And there are minimal differences. And I'm aware that as you progress through your playthroughs, that first part does get quicker by you knowing what to do. And there's also things where, like, you know, people level up quicker, your levels carry over, stuff like that. But it's something that I feel like Nintendo made that game with the mindset of you were going to, like, so there's the different houses that you, the titular three houses, that you pick the house and you stick with that group and you play that story through. But there's an option when you play as each house that you can, like, recruit basically everybody else, except for, I think there's like two or three characters that you can't recruit on a playthrough. And I remember when that game came out that basically everybody that I was talking to on their first playthrough made it their damnedest to recruit every single character that they possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's anything that, like, I think it's the kind of thing where it's not the player doing the wrong thing. I think it's, you know, Nintendo Intelligent Systems, Koei Tecmo, making this weird decision of, like, this is how people should play, so this is how we're going to design the game, without realizing that this isn't what a large size of their base, like, I guess maybe some of their most dedicated fans of how they're going to play the game. And it's frustrating, and it's something that I see with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild in the Korok seeds, and that, like, I personally, like, and that's one where I understand more of why Nintendo made the decisions that they did, because having the Korok seeds gives it, so as you're exploring this open world, there is something defined at almost every juncture. There's always something defined, whether it's under a rock, hidden in the tree, what have you. There's all these little puzzles, and you slowly accumulate them and unlock things. And there is a reward at the end. It's a golden piece of poop. But also the way that those unlocks are structured and how they expand your inventory is that they all kind of have, like, you, I think it's something where, like, once you get to, like, half of the Koroks, you basically, there's like two or three inventory unlocks after that. It's kind of, it's diminishing returns.
Right.
Like, they're set up in a way where you're not supposed to get everyone.
Right. They're everywhere so that you can always find them.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want you to have to hunt for them.
Yeah. And it's something
they want
it
to,
like,
just occur naturally.
Yeah. And I think it's something that, I mean, it's that odds that Nintendo has. And the kind of the last point of this kind of thing is, I think back to when E3 was a thing and Nintendo used to have more specified press events at E3 before, I guess it got shitty again. I don't know. But it was for Super Smash Brothers for Wii U when they were introducing Amiibo, and they had like a developer roundtable where Sakurai was there.
Yes.
And we were, I think someone asked him about Amiibo. And Sakurai's response was basically like, oh, just get one. Just get your favorite character. And I remember,
don't try to buy them all.
I heard that quote and I'm like, this is going to be a debacle when these things come out. Because
you have to,
everybody that wrote for Nintendo Report, it was covering Nintendo. Everybody that was a vocal Nintendo fan paying attention to what Sakurai was saying, every person was like, nah, I'm going to get every friggin' Amiibo. Like,
right.
Like, you don't understand what how your audience is. And granted, I think it from Nintendo's mindset, the idea for Amiibo with Smash Brothers was like, just get one and then you share it with your friends. It's just this idealized way that doesn't exist in real life.
Right.
And it's just something recurring that I see with Nintendo is a complete tangent. I hope this was of value to someone.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And speaking of things that are of value to people, Star Wars Squadrons, great value, only $49.99.
I think it was $40 at launch?
Might have been $39.99.
I'm waiting for it to arrive.
I was so concentrated on the segue that I didn't actually remember how much it cost.
I think it was $40 at launch, but I got it for, I think it was $16 or $17. I'm waiting for a Black Friday Target order to arrive with that game in it. And then I will join you in playing Star Wars Squadrons. But tell me about how it is.
So Star Wars Squadrons is a wonderful game. I've been playing a bunch. I finished the story back when it first came out. And since then, I've just been playing the multiplayer. And they've actually, so one of the things that they made a big deal about when this game came out is they were like, hey, it's a $40 game. What's there is what's there. We're not planning on doing DLC. It's just, this is the experience. If you want this experience, here is this experience. And I enjoyed that mindset. It's a refreshing mindset to see. But I won't lie that if they did give me more, I would take it. And so we had the delightful surprise, after I think even they were surprised by how well the game did, that they have added a new map. They are adding additional options to how multiplayer works. And it's not here yet, but they are adding two new ships, the B-Wing and the TIE Defender, for free, which is very exciting. But it's a cool, I mean, anyone who interacts with me in any way knows that I like spaceship games and I like Star Wars. And it's cool to see the space sim genre was a genre that was like really strong in like the 90s for a few years and then just sort of stopped, at least in the mainstream. And so it's cool to see a game like this do really well and be really successful and continue to have a strong multiplayer presence. Because hopefully it means that maybe we can have more games like this. Maybe we can make another Star Wars Squadrons that's like Clone Wars era. That'd be neat. But yeah, it's a great game. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I just like that they're kind of actually making meaningful Star Wars games.
Yeah.
Because there was a while where when EA got the license and the new movies came out, like, I think the Lego Star Wars games are fine.
Sure.
The Battlefront games were cool, but not my, like, the kind of larger, the large scale shooting multiplayer games aren't my bag. Yeah. I did like the single player stuff in Battlefront 1 and 2, though.
Yeah, and that Battlefront 2 especially did, by the time they stopped supporting Battlefront 2, they had really gotten it to the point that it needed to be at. That is by the end of that game's update cycle, it was a very good game. But yeah, Jedi Fallen Order is fantastic.
I'm looking forward. There's a note here as we get to one of our later topics of, Neil needs to fucking play Star Wars shit.
Yes, you do.
Which is true. Cause I got Yakuza when maybe I should have just played Jedi Fallen Order the whole time. Cause that got added to Xbox Game Pass or EA Play. The day that the Series X came out. And that was a game that I had heard that Fallen Order was a little buggy at launch. And I was like, I'll wait for a patch. And I don't think a patch ever actually happened.
There,
at least not that I heard about it.
There was a patch, though. And I believe it was more buggy on Xbox than it was on PS4. PS4, the only real bugs I ever encountered was that occasionally I would move through an area too fast and it would freeze to load. But that was it. I saw much worse stuff on Xbox, but I think a lot of it depended on, like, did you have it downloaded? Was it installed on an external media source?
Yeah,
like,
and I had
stuff like that.
And I had an old Xbox One up until I got the Series X.
Yeah.
So I kind of had it in my mind where I'm like, oh, I'll probably buy Fallen Order when I get a Series X. And then they announced it, like, guess what? It's coming to Game Pass.
Yeah, well, when it probably
the day
runs,
the Series X comes out.
From seeing what the Series X can do to just brute force its way through performance issues on Xbox One games, I'm sure it runs great.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll have to dive into that, and I'll get Squadrons. I actually have a buddy of mine who started playing Squadrons competitively, but he has, like, the whole, like, you know, the throttle and
yes,
all that setup on PC.
Yeah, I do it in VR, but I don't have the flight stick and everything, which would be awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love that it's cross compatible across every system.
Yes.
Cuz even it is the kind of thing, like, I know, like, if I'm playing on a controller on my Xbox against someone with a VR heads-up display and, you know, all the fancy gadgets and who's, it's like, they're probably going to kick my ass, but I'm not really looking to play Squadrons and win everything. I just kind of want to fly around and have fun.
Yeah, well, the VR is definitely an advantage, especially in the Rebel ships where you have, like, an open cockpit. In the TIE fighter, you're screwed no matter what because you're just looking through a peephole on the front of a sphere, and it's a horribly designed cockpit, and it's no wonder they lost.
Yeah, I'm looking forward for that game coming in because I had my eye on it, but it was another thing where I kept on having the EA Play free trial of it up.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm getting the full game, I'm just going to wait for that.
Yeah,
because I have heard that, like, playing through the single player is probably advised if you're going to go play.
Yeah, it teaches you all of the ships really well. And it's a legitimately good. You could buy that game for, you know, even at $40, you could buy that game, just play through the single player, and I think you'd be perfectly satisfied with the value, which I don't think you could say about, like, Battlefront 2's single player.
Yeah. I wound up only playing Battlefront 2 single player when it was free on EA Play.
Yeah.
and it, like, it was fun. Like, definitely enjoyed playing it.
Sure.
But it didn't feel that substantial.
No. Yeah, this is a much better. It's weird to get a much more substantial experience from a $20 cheaper game.
Yeah. So I guess let's kick over back to Nintendo stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of things that get updates that everybody loves.
Yeah. Maybe.
This is the best
System
segue
Update
I can
11
get.
Came out on the Switch this week, which was, I think, honestly, the first major update to the Switch in almost
it
4
sure
years.
Sure was. You say
so there
in
were,
four
there, there's
years.
Been a couple other things.
I think you mean ever.
Yeah. I guess since the system came out, they did add things like you could capture video. So there were like a few things here and there. But yeah, like System Update 11 added some substantial things. I just think that they're all terrible.
They're very Nintendo.
So
in the most charming, terrible way possible.
There's two things. It's one, I was actually excited when I saw this about how, because as it stands now, you can like tweet the pictures that you take and the videos that you take. But this was like you can share it to your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And having played the Xbox Series X, that has a button on it that if you press the button while you're playing a game, it straight up sends the screen capture to your phone using the Xbox app.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is great. Like, how smooth is this? Imagine if Nintendo had something as simple and elegant.
Yes.
They do not. Yeah. Despite the fact that they do have a Nintendo Switch Online app, which, I mean, that seems like something that maybe you could use to maybe entice people who aren't subscribers to download that app. So that way they could capture video and photos directly to their phone. Instead, you have to go into the capture segment of the system. You have to select the photo. Then you can select them. You can select a batch of photos.
Uh-huh.
Then you have to take your phone and scan a QR code.
Yes.
This QR code will set up a temporary Wi-Fi connection between your Switch and your phone. This will also disconnect you from your existing Wi-Fi connection. So that means if you're like downloading a game, that will be paused. If you were playing online somehow, that would be paused.
Mm-hmm.
Then that kicks you off from that. And then you have to scan a second QR code, which will then take you to your web browser on your phone. And first I thought it was like it was like a temporary website setup. No, it straight up just connects to your Switch.
Yeah, it's connecting to like an IP address.
Yeah,
like
that is on your Switch.
Yeah,
it is seemingly a direct connection to that, which is one like I know Nintendo isn't the most secure console, like the Switch specifically is not very secure. This just seems like you're asking for it.
It feels like a very open-ended thing. Yeah, this will probably be really useful in a few years when we all decide
when people are trying to
hack
their Switch.
Yeah.
It'll be called like, I don't know, Switchy or something. Yeah. What do they call it? That's usually what they call emulators somehow. I don't know.
I can't think of a single emulator that goes by that naming convention, but sure.
I don't know. I'm just what would you call a Switch emulator in like 10 years?
The Swatch.
The Swatch. Oh, that's pretty good. I'm trying to think what would my Switch is it, maybe we can make something where it's like the street that you grow up on.
Oh, and that's your Switch. The first letter of your last name. The month you were born. Yeah.
So the other thing with System Update 11 that is
real
frustrating.
Quick, have you successfully done the photo transfer thing?
No, I haven't.
Okay, good. Me neither. I've tried.
Okay.
But
I tried twice and it didn't work either time.
Cool.
It took me to a web page with no images.
Cool. Me too. I'm glad that I'm not the only one.
Yeah. In addition to it being a stupidly convoluted process,
it might not work.
As a person who has spent more time with the Switch than he has probably any other device in his life over the past 4 years. It's just why. So the other thing is, why is there a Nintendo Switch Online app that is now permanently on the home screen? I don't know why. Like, why does that exist? What is the point of it?
Conceptually, the main thing that I see on it is that I can get to all my NES and SNES games in one list that's for some reason backwards.
It's in reverse chronological order and you can't sort it at all.
Right. Except for Star Fox 2, which is in 1991.
What? I didn't even notice that.
Yep. It's
Why?
On the wrong end. Also,
that doesn't even make sense.
Every game is listed. So So you can go and look at individual games. You see descriptions of them and it gives an ESRB rating. Every single game is rated T for teen for violence and language. Kirby is rated T for teen for violence and language.
Could that be something that because probably the highest rating on all of those games is that?
I think it's the rating for the SNES app and the NES app.
Yeah.
But they display it on the individual games.
That's funny.
By its description, which is I just saw it when I went to boot up Star Fox 2 and then like went through the game. I'm like, who says something? I'm like, does Wolf say something? Like,
Falco just says fuck.
Yeah. I'm like, boy, I'd be amazed if I never noticed this before. But yeah,
it's actually a voice sample. It's Dylan Cuthbert saying fuck.
Fuck. British accent. That's weird.
but yeah, like I don't get the point of it. And I guess like there's probably it's the way that I looked at it is it felt like someone at Nintendo was like, how can we gin up Nintendo Switch Online membership sales? And someone was like, what if we put a button on the home screen? And this wasn't anyone who actually worked with any development on the system.
Yeah.
It was like some senior exec in marketing that was just like, we should do this. It'll be great. Like people can go there. They'll see about what games have online play. They'll be able to look at their games in a new way. And then like somebody at gunpoint had to make this hub.
Yeah.
And there's no point for it. The one thing is that I think so like the eShop, when you connect to it, like that's just a straight up like website that you're going to. Apparently the Nintendo Switch Online hub is like an app made specifically for it, as opposed to like going to a browser, which is what the eShop is. So like that could be potentially better down the line. But as it stands right now, like I don't see any use for this other than like you like that homepage thing is, I guess, kind of neat because it's like it did have like here's some 2-player Super Nintendo games, which, by the way, is something that you can sort when you go to the Super Nintendo app.
And it's no fewer. In fact, it's kind of more steps.
It's more steps
than just you have opening the Super Nintendo, because you still open the Super Nintendo app.
Yeah.
When
and if you
want
to back out of a game after you go to it, you just get taken to an app that you weren't in. Like it's a bad user experience.
Right.
It's so clumsy. Like it bugs me.
Yeah, it's baffling and unnecessary. And it stylistically doesn't match the other home screen buttons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I think this might have been Matt Zawadniak again. He's getting mentioned a lot in this podcast.
Yeah. Maybe that means we have to invite him on.
We should. But he pointed out, and this, I don't know if this was originally him or somebody else on Reddit or something, but the Nintendo Switch Online icon isn't centered in its button.
Yeah.
And once you see it, you can never unsee it.
Yeah. So the one positive thing about System Update 11, I think the trending tab is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like you go into like your profile and you go there and it'll show you like, here's what games your friends are playing the most.
Yeah.
Here's what ones they started recently playing and new releases and stuff like that. It's also fun because you can see like what friends of yours are degenerates putting way too much time into a crappy game.
Yeah.
You can see like, oh, they did 1,000 hours of Animal Crossing. Wow.
Yeah, boy, that's a lot of time in Senran Kagura.
Yeah. And if you're not Zach Miller,
it's allowed for exactly one person.
I mean, when I saw that there was a new system update and it changed things, I was really excited and I was let down so quickly.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't remember who initially said, but like I heard about the update before I actually had a chance to download it. And I just saw you can access your SNES games from the home screen. And I was like, oh, like I can add just a Star Fox button on my home screen. That's neat. Nope. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I'd like folders. If the update was just we added folders, 10 out of 10 game of the year.
Need more Labo VR support.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll ever go back to that.
It stuck around for like there is more stuff in lingering development for that than I would have expected. Like things kept trickling out for it for way too long.
Smash mode.
The Smash and the Captain Toad thing.
Yeah.
Was it a Need for Speed game that got Labo wheel support?
I think so. Or maybe it was it Need for Speed? I forget.
It might have been Burnout. It was some racing game on Switch randomly out of the blue was like, you can do this now. Okay.
But anyway.
Speaking of things from random and out of the blue, Fogs is on Game Pass. What else is on Game Pass, Neil?
So this is the, I guess, where John and I reveal our true intentions of bringing back Connectivity, which is we both like Xbox. That's where we're at. I'm just amazed at the deal and value that Game Pass is right now. And maybe long tail, big picture. Maybe Game Pass is the end of video games as we know, and it's going to ruin everything. That's a distinct possibility.
I would love to see a profit breakdown of how the hell Game Pass works.
So, I mean, right now they're clearly in the phase of just like mass user acquisition, and it's working. I do know, and this is I believe to the best of my knowledge, if you get your game on Game Pass, you get paid. I think actually, you know what? I will say this because I think enough people have been like public about this. I know like the guy from No More Robots, who that's actually a game that's on this list. Yes, Your Grace. He has a number. No More Robots has a number of games in Game Pass. Nowhere Prophet, which I actually reviewed on Switch. It's a pretty good game. They also did Descenders, which came out on Switch recently. He's very honest and frank about a lot of things with video game sales, which I appreciate. It's interesting to read. And he mentioned that like when games launch on Game Pass, it's basically like they break even on day one.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like Xbox fantastic. Just pays them.
Because it'll be like for a year, your game will be on Game Pass. I think that's usually what the negotiations are for. So that's why like you look at this list of games that are coming to Game Pass in December, which actually. We were recording this on, I guess, the evening of December 2nd. And I'm going to go check to see if Haven is on Game Pass, because that game looks fantastic. That one, it was supposed to be coming. It is also coming to Switch. Haven, it's by the guys who made the game Fury, that I know it came out on Switch a couple years ago. I think it was originally on PS4.
That
was pretty good.
Yeah.
But Haven is like a co-op RPG that looked really beautiful when I played it on my junky laptop. I actually wrote a preview of it on NintendoReport.com. The Switch release got pushed to 2021, but I'm really looking forward to playing that game. Fogs is another game that's out on Game Pass that we should have a review coming in really soon from Stephen Green. I also had an interview with the developers of Fogs that went up today on NintendoWorldReport.com, so go check that out. It's where and I liked that I got to use this headline. The developers actually called out about how the boss battles in Fogs, which is a cute game where you control like a cat dog physics-based dog thing that looks like Katamari shit, the developers actually were like, our boss battles were inspired by Dark Souls.
Good.
So that's why it is Fogs the Dark Souls of funny physics based dog games, was my headline for the interview feature that I wrote. But Fogs is really cool, and like that's on Game Pass, so that's great. The rest of the list, Control, which I don't know if I actually want to play Control. Did you play Control?
I played the first couple minutes of Control via that Switch network test.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that happened,
which was very impressive. There's no way I would pay money to not even like owning a digital game. You're already pretending to own a game, but paying to borrow a streaming right to a game on another computer somewhere else is too far gone for me. But I was impressed by how well it worked. And those first few minutes seemed neat.
Yeah, I heard that was a game that kind of ran poorly on older systems.
Yes.
So maybe it'll be worth popping it on Series X at some point.
I've heard good things about it. I mean, I've heard a lot of Metroidvania kind of comparisons. And yeah, it looked cool.
Yeah. So Fogs, Haven, Slime Rancher, which is a game that I know that Nintendo Reports and former Connectivity co-host, I think, Brian Rose. I know he really liked that game. I think he reviewed it on Switch for us. Maybe. I think. I don't know. Yes, Your Grace, which is, I believe we have a review from James Jones on Nintendo World Report. That's on Game Pass. Dragon Quest XI S, which we talked about before the show a little bit, in which I have played 10 hours of Dragon Quest XI twice, and I may make it a third time playing 10 hours of Dragon Quest 11.
They need cloud saves.
Because I played a chunk of it on PS4, I played a chunk of it on Switch, and now I'm looking at this Xbox release being like, I mean, I could pick up my Switch version, or I could just play it on Xbox. It's weird because I love Dragon Quest games, but for some reason, like, I just have not been able to get into this for as long. Like, I don't know if it's the pure length of the game or what. It's not like I'm not enjoying myself. It's just that I fall off it.
Yeah. You should try playing it in 2D. The first 10 hours, you should play in 2D.
Maybe I should do that.
That's just a different perspective on it.
Yeah. Maybe that'll help me get over the hump.
Yeah.
Call of the Sea, which looks like a pretty cool game, launching on Game Pass. December 8th, that's from Raw Fury. Monster Sanctuary, which is a Team 17 game that seems kind of Pokemon-y. There's a game Unto the End, the super hot sequel. Ukulele in the Impossible Lair is going to be on Game Pass. And Gang Beasts, which is one of those goofy multiplayer games that I wish I could go to an event and play with people. But alas, COVID.
Guys, remember Friendship and Togetherness? Yeah. That was neat.
I miss it. But yeah, it's... If you have access to an Xbox or a computer, or I guess at this point, even like an Android device or like cloud,
that also works surprisingly well.
Yeah. I highly recommend Game Pass. There's a lot of stuff there.
This podcast brought to you by Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah. I might start Haven tonight if it's available.
I just saw Ukulele and the Impossible Lair on that list. I should really finish that game at some point.
It's good. I believe I got saddled with the review because I had my doubts because I did not like Ukulele.
Yeah.
And it's a very good game. I don't think I ever want to play it again, but that's not really a knock on its quality. It's just I played enough.
I think Impossible Lair might have been the moment where that cemented for me that I prefer 3D platformers over 2D platformers. Because I really liked Ukulele, and then everyone was like, this one's so much better. And I was like, oh, sweet. I like 2D platformers. I like Donkey Kong Country. And I was like, oh, this is good, but it's... Nah.
So my thing with Ukulele in the Impossible Lair is what I think that solidified with me is I don't like that kind of... And this is I would say the style of 2D gameplay here is super similar to Donkey Kong Country.
Yes.
And that is a series that I guess longtime fans will know. I maybe infamously, I think the Super Nintendo Donkey Kong Country games are kind of overrated. My hatred for them has subsided over the years because I mean, like the music's super good. Mm-hmm. I have like replayed, 2 and 3 over the past couple of years and like, they're fine. I just think like, for example, like Super Mario World and Yoshi's Island just clown all over them. Like they're fine platformers. I feel like they're more in the pantheon of like, I don't know. Oh God, I'm blanking. Like Mohawk and Headphone Jack. Maybe they're on par with that, or Plock.
Wait, are you're saying that Donkey Kong Country is on par with Mohawk and Headphone Jack?
Yo, that game is a trip.
Please send all complaints to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. This segment was not brought to you by Xbox Game Pass and Xbox. These opinions do not represent the opinions of Xbox and its subsidiaries.
But I think I think to your point about Ukulele and the Impossible Lair solidifying that you like 3D platformers more, I think Ukulele Impossible Lair confirmed to me that I don't like the almost punitively difficult 2D platformers. And it's not that like despite the title, it's not like it's an impossible game, but it just seems like some of the design is like engineered to get you as opposed to like explore this world. It's like, no, you need to like just nail this perfectly or else you're going to miss the collectibles and you're going to die.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that happened in this game a lot. It's something that happens in those, even the retro Donkey Kong Country games, which I think all of these games are good. It's just a structure of design that I don't think I enjoy as much as I used to. My favorite part of the Impossible Lair, however, was when all the stuff that you did on the overworld. I thought that like those puzzles were really fun.
It's like a weird 2D Zelda overworld.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
That was the thing that made that game work for me.
Yeah.
I think if that was just the 2D level strung together, I wouldn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a good game. If you have Game Pass, you should play it. There's a lot of games on Game Pass. You should play Game Pass.
Look forward to continued love on random Xbox stuff. And maybe one day I'll get an Xbox Series X. But I made the conscious decision not to even bother trying this year. And I'll get one when I can buy one off a shelf.
Yeah. It seems like you had to get in on those pre-orders or else you're just going to make yourself sick.
Yep.
So I'm glad I got in on my pre-order.
We'll get
it sucks seeing people that I know that like after the systems came out, they're like, I could totally go for getting one. And it's like, you're not. They're gone.
Yeah. No, you had to have made this decision. It was totally possible to get one, assuming you made the decision a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like a lot of this pre-order is like, OK, you still needed to be on the ball. But like it was kind of like if there was a will, there was a way. In September.
Yeah.
But now, like I know. There was some allotments at launch and there was some stuff on Black Friday, but it just seemed really difficult to get.
They do, for my limited exposure to it, they do seem to be in better shape than PlayStation as far as supply and being able
It also seems
it seems like there are more Xboxes out there to be sold than there are PlayStations.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also seems like and I feel like I might have engaged in some mild console wars nonsense, but on the other side of launch, like I'm probably going to get a PS5 eventually. I just don't have an interest right now.
Oh yeah.
So I was just saying this is no console wars nonsense, but I've heard that the PS5s are also like way more buggy. Hardware fairly. And not to say that I've heard of stories of Series X's crapping out right outside of the box anyway.
Well, yeah, if you blow your vape smoke into them, they.
Yeah, no, like,
they
like,
really
like, listen, your Xbox cannot rip a bong. We should all know this. You can put a ping pong ball on top. I still haven't done that yet.
It has.
I do like the little green thing, although it does get a little worrisomely hot sometimes, but. Yeah. You know, it's well vented.
I'll get a PS5 when they do a revision of it that doesn't look so goddamn stupid.
Yeah.
That is I've seen both of them out of the box now, and the Xbox Series X is way smaller than I expected it to be. And
it just looks like it's like slightly bigger than a router.
Yeah, it's like a perfectly reasonable size. It looks sleek and clean. And then the PS5 looks like a bad mock-up that you would find on Reddit, not like a finished project, like a finished product that people would sell for money. It is the ugliest system I think I've ever seen.
Yes. And it's huge. Like just seems unwieldy.
Yeah, it's like, ridiculously huge.
I might be like whenever they announce their revision, which please Lord, they have to. Yeah. I might be there day one for the PS5 Slim.
Yeah.
But I might hold out. I think my things with PS5 that could get me to go the other way, like, I mean, maybe Sony's going to throw some money at an exclusive. If Final Fantasy VII Remake 2 is PS5 exclusive, I'm probably getting a PS5 for that. Thankfully, I have another 17 years to wait for that game.
Right. Yeah, we'll be well past the PS5. But
Final Fantasy 16. Which, unless we get any word about it, like coming to Xbox, like 6 months to a year later. Which considering that Final Fantasy VII Remake, I think the exclusivity on Final Fantasy VII Remake to PS4 was a year, supposedly.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll hear something more about that. Hopefully that's coming to Xbox next year. Cause I wouldn't mind replaying it on Xbox. That'd be fun. I really, really like that game. Final Fantasy 16, depending on when that comes out, how it's received, that might be a game that might get me to think about getting a PS5, but I don't think a revision will be out by then. So maybe I'll just wait.
Yeah. You get the Switch version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The Final Fantasy 16 Pocket.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
But
speaking of pockets,
is it time for Star Wars?
I have no idea how to get from pockets to Star Wars, but
let's just talk about Star Wars.
OK, so
first off. Spoiler warning. If you have not seen the latest Mandalorian as of the end of November, so episode 5 of the second season of the Mandalorian.
Yes.
This is the rest of the show will be about this. Feel free to email any thoughts, welcomes, questions, comments to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We will see you next week if you're not sticking around for the Star Wars spoiler chat.
And if you haven't seen any of them, you should watch them.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's quite good. Okay, everybody gone? Cool. Okay, so you have on the notes, you have not only Ahsoka and Grogu, but Bo as well. So we'll talk classic characters and Grogu's fate and future.
Yeah,
I guess.
Just first off, it's just super cool to see Bo-Katan, especially played by Katie Sackhoff, who uh-huh. did the voice for her. It's a bummer that Ashley Eckstein did not get to continue playing Ahsoka.
Yeah.
But I thought Rosario Dawson was totally fine in the role and like did a good job of bringing that character to life. Like just very happy, thrilled to see those characters come to life.
And I also wouldn't, there's a tendency within the fan base to assume that Ashley Eckstein was probably like just shunned away from it. It could also be that woman like runs a very successful clothing brand and is probably very busy and
like,
I don't actually know that much about.
Yeah.
I will say having Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan, my comments.
She does her universe.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Having her play Bo-Katan, it was crazy because it's just there's. Normally, when you see a character in live action for the first time, there's a disconnect between the live action version and the animated version. But with Bo-Katan, it's just, yep, that's her. There's just no disconnect there. There's a perfect continuity. The character is exactly who the character has always been. And it's incredible. And I mean, Dave Filoni has a habit of casting his animated characters with actors who could potentially play them in live action. And I don't know what order the design process goes in. The characters might literally be designed to look like their actors. But that was the case with Rebels too, where you could pretty much take the primary Rebels cast and they could all play those characters in live action and it would be fine. I'm
sad we won't get to see. Who knows? The hope springs eternal for a live action FPJ. That's Kanan Jarrus.
Yeah, I guess Rebels spoilers too. You're still here. So, yeah. He could be a force ghost.
Yeah. I mean, I stan Freddie Prinze Jr. very much. If only because he's really into Super Mecha Baseball, which is just the best. Ezra. Yeah. I guess the kid who played Ezra could also do a good job being live action Ezra.
The lady that plays Hera Syndulla in Rebels. Hera shows up in Star Wars Squadrons and she is actually mocapped by the voice actor who played her in Rebels as
That's awesome.
Which is neat.
Yeah. But yeah, so I was just thrilled to see that. And I know there's the complaints of The Mandalorian taking their time. Like actually my dad was like being like, it sure is taking its time doing stuff. And I'm like, but you haven't even seen the cartoons, Dad. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So we all have people in our lives who, you know, through poor life choices, maybe haven't seen the animated Star Wars shows.
I've tried to sell it to my parents so hard in the past couple. They've not seen the Ahsoka episode when last I talked to them. But I was just like, here's Bo-Katan's life story.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's touching. Like, have you heard of the Duchess Satine, Mom? Yeah. Did you know that Obi-Wan probably fucks?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a suspicious looking child that shows up in the later seasons who looks like weirdly like a mix of those two characters. I do wonder, like, so as somebody who has religiously watched every Star Wars show, including Star Wars Resistance, which I don't recommend watching.
I don't think it's that bad, but it's not. Definitely not. There's maybe like four or five episodes that are.
It has some moments. If you have young kids, then
that is the cartoon that my toddler has been more apt to pay attention to. And I do think the animation style is cool. Like, I think it is not a worthless addition to the overall Star Wars canon. It is definitely very low on the totem pole.
Yes. Yeah. You're comparing it to probably two of the greatest animated shows ever. So it's hard
Rebels is fantastic. I feel like Clone Wars, especially early season Clone Wars is a little rough, but the highs of Clone Wars are immensely high.
I enjoy that you share my somewhat controversial opinion that Rebels might be better than Clone Wars.
I mean, I think it is. Again, I think the highs of Clone War, like really, those last four episodes of Clone Wars are
The final season of Clone Wars. But the final season of Clone Wars is pretty much just Rebels. Like that's Rebels team making it, not the original Clone Wars team.
And I do think like there's some stretches like the Mortis stuff. There's storylines there, a lot of the Darksaber things in Clone Wars.
Essentially, all of those plots that have now continued through Rebels and into Mandalorian.
Yeah, it's almost like that was the strongest part of that show. And they realized that and they continued it. Like for me, and I think the thing with Rebels is, and it's with a lot of the Star Wars cartoons, is that there's still that element of like, these are for kids.
Yeah,
I think Clone Wars and Rebels both have that. That's part of the reason why they have their little bit of like the rocky start, because there needs to be that kid component to it. But it's the end of the first season of Rebels is when that show kicks into high gear and it never really slows down.
When Darth Vader shows up, right? Is the end of the first season of Rebels?
I mean, that's the fulcrum season, reveal.
I think
Vader
is,
shows up at the last episode of the first season.
Listen, there is an episode of Rebels in which Ahsoka Tano, Darth Vader, and Darth Maul are all on screen at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's just Darth Maul enters the scene flying his TIE fighter with the Force while standing on top of it with his lightsaber ignited while his cape blows in the wind despite being inside. And it's
Darth Maul rules.
It's
such a fun character.
It's so good. Yeah.
The fact that they took a nothing burger of a character from episode one and made him one of the most compelling villains.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you should. I think one of my favorite Star Wars members. So my wife is a huge Darth Maul simp. And so we went to Solo. Spoilers for Solo, I suppose, too. And the final scene of that movie, you see Darth Maul's leg before seeing Darth Maul. And she immediately just started punching me frantically in the arm when Darth Maul showed up. She was like, holy shit, he's back. And it was very fun to see. So with Mando, and you have these characters from Clone Wars and Rebels coming back, how do you feel about the way those characters have been treated for the people who haven't seen the animated shows? And should we care that, like, do we need to cater to that portion of the audience, or is it kind of like, well, if you haven't been following this, then of course you're not going to know?
I feel like, I mean, I also think that the show does a good enough job. I guess with Ahsoka, it's a little harder because I think a lot more of the Ahsoka reveal, it means a lot more if you're aware of the character.
Yes.
I think like with Bo, like that kind of works as is. You get enough information. It's not like not to put that character down, but like you kind of learn that she wants the Darksaber, which is the thing that Moff Gideon has. Mm-hmm. And like, that's fine. You're good. Old Mandalore. This is the way we found out that Mando is part of like a religious sect,
which
an extremist sect, which is kind of funny.
I was very proud because at the end of season one, my wife and I pause when you get. So throughout season one, you're getting all these flashbacks to the Mando as a kid being rescued during the Clone Wars. And when you finally get the full version of that scene, you can see the crest on the side of the armor for the Mandalorians that rescue him. And so naturally during that episode, I paused to check what crest it was. And it's Clan Vizsla, which was Death Watch. So figured that out in season one and felt very proud of myself that was actually what they were doing. And, you know, props to Dave Filoni for actually paying attention to what crest he puts on the side of the characters in the background of that scene.
That's very good. Yeah, because I look forward to seeing like what happens with that Mandalorian stuff. But like that's why with that, like, I think you have enough information there that it's fine. I feel like it kind of depends on where they go with the rest of the season in the show, as to whether or not maybe they're going to lose people as they dive deeper into the canon.
Well, and with Ahsoka, they do toward the end of that episode, she asks the magistrate or whatever where Grand Admiral Thrawn is, which if that becomes a subplot that we follow at all, they have a lot to catch people up on.
Yeah.
If that's the entire final arc of Rebels, that it's like, okay, Hang on. Yeah. So there were these space whales, and yeah. they whisked the one of the last remaining Jedi Padawans and a blue dude off to who knows where. And we're going to go find him. Also. Oh, and OK, so Dave Filoni, I don't know if this was today. This was recently, but he made a comment that this episode with Ahsoka, because people have been naturally saying, they're like, OK, so last we saw Ahsoka, she and Sabine were going off to find Ezra and Thrawn. And so where's Sabine? And Dave Filoni made the classic trolley Dave Filoni style comment of, well, you Wonderful. Don't know that this episode takes place after the epilogue to Rebels. And I sit there thinking about it for a second. I go, shit, he's right.
Because he's just like, I'm not saying it's definitely that, but.
Yeah. And it, so evil, so evil. So yeah, it may be that we're still before that scene, and that whatever information she gets about Thrawn is what then sends her to go get Sabine, and then they go and find.
Yeah.
find then. And hopefully that'll be its own show.
Yeah, like, I mean, I feel like that's almost the route I'd rather see is keep Mandalorian kind of going on its path. And I mean, I do think there's, because they're building to taking Yoda to, I've got to forget, was it Typhon? Is that the name of that?
That sounds right.
Yeah, wherever that Jedi temple is that Ahsoka refers to.
Yeah.
Like, that might be where this season ends. Or it could be, you know, maybe there's some other inciting event. That the season ends on with like a fight with Moff Gideon. And then maybe early next season is going to be going to that Jedi temple. I don't know. I feel like the way the show goes, I just expect it to take longer than I expect.
Well, and there are so many do we try to resolve the baby Yoda find a Jedi to train him thing? Do we try to resolve the Darksaber thing? Ahsoka's asking about Thrawn. Do we need to deal with that at all? Or is that a separate TV show? Like where are we going? And which of these many threads are we gonna follow?
Yeah, all I know is I like what they're selling.
Yep,
it's a real good show. Enjoying every episode. And there's only three left, and then who knows when the next Star Wars on. Well, wait, what is the Bad Batch supposed to come out? Is that just nebulously the future?
I don't think they have a firm date on it, but it's Disney, and if there's one thing they can do, it's keep up a constant stream until they've milked the franchise to death.
Yeah.
Which I'm honestly surprised they haven't done with Star Wars yet, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I think they kind of milked it too much and realized that it got sour.
They laid off of the movies for a bit and
but so I guess maybe the Bad Batch will be the next Star Wars thing. Star Wars thing in moving images.
It'll be interesting if it would be really fun to see like the analytics from Disney Plus. To see how many people have jumped from Mandalorian over into Clone Wars or over into Rebels. Then if a show like Bad Batch can win anyone from Mandalorian over into the animated Star Wars.
Because I feel like there's probably a lot of crossover of people who watched Clone Wars that are watching Mando. It just seems like there's a lot more people watching Mando than there are the cartoons.
Right. And I mean, you made the comment about them being, you know, they definitely are geared for kids, but I think the fun thing about having resistance out there is that you can kind of go, okay, this is what animated Star Wars for kids is. And then there's animated Star Wars that is appropriate for kids, but isn't uninteresting for adults.
Yeah.
And that's where Clone Wars and Rebels sits. So if you haven't seen it, watch it.
Yeah, I highly recommend. So, well, I guess, maybe it'll be next week's show. We'll talk more Mando, or maybe we'll wait until the end of the season. Who knows?
Yeah.
But maybe we'll end each episode for the rest of the year with some Mando talk.
I just gotta get Jordan on here so I can talk about Star Trek.
Yeah, so I've heard good things about Discovery.
The first season was trash.
Yeah, that's what
the second season is real good.
Yeah,
and the third season is
season three
good.
Right now.
Yep, yeah. And third season has been not as good as the second season, but good so far. The second season was so good that all the characters from it are now getting their own show. So it's that kind of good where it's like, oh, we should keep making more of just this season.
Like Star Trek falls into that like the same ballpark as Doctor Who for me, which is like every time I watch those shows, I have a good time, but I just never had the connection.
Yeah. Yeah. With Star Trek, I was very homeschooled. So I watched a lot of original series. And so, that's
the one that I like the most. Like weirdly is TOS is what kind of like that's kind of what I watched when I was younger. My parents were really into it.
Yeah.
And then I like kind of watched more Next Gen Voyager and stuff, but just never got into it that much. It was just kind of the thing where it's like, oh, yeah, look, it's Picard. I'll watch this episode.
If you want to come over, I'll marathon him with you. That's been for the past several years because my wife did not grow up with any of them. And so we have like a few episodes left until she has seen every Star Trek episode. But yeah, no, it's been a good time.
This was a good time.
This was a good time.
Hopefully the people listening also had a good time.
Now watch this be the only episode we record until May of 2023.
Yeah.
Coming back and be like, hey, we're rebooting it.
Yeah, we're rebooting it. Nintendo released the Switch U. It didn't go that well.
The new Switch U, Lite.
Yeah. let's commit to it.
Let's do it.
See y'all next week.
Next week. Same NWR time, same NWR channel.
Yeah, we need to figure out what day this is coming out. So
I don't know. We'll see how editing goes. And whatever day it comes out, that will be the day it comes out forever. So we have to be careful.
All right. Good plan.
Good plan. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you have suggestions for segments, comments on Star Wars spoilers, or you too are enjoying the wonders that only Xbox can provide, send an email to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Bye.
Bye.